Okay, let's go with that. Hi, this is Kathy Mellor, and this is Avoiding Burnout and Keeping Yourself Inspired. I'm excited to share some thoughts with you because I know this time of year especially, we see the end is in sight, but sometimes we start to feel a little overwhelmed, and I think that Lemmy has placed this call topic in a really good place. So I'd like to start with just, you know, sharing the most obvious thing about staying inspired and not getting burned out, because I think it really is a fabulous mindset to keep yourself in a place where, you know, mentoring is a passion. And when we see successes in our students, it reminds us, right? When we see growth in ourselves and in our ability to, you know, really start nailing some of the skills in mentoring, it reignites our passion. And so just, you know, being connected to that is fabulous. I know there are some of you who have maybe taken on the role of mentor because nobody else would do it, or you've taken it on because somebody asked you and you couldn't say no, or whatever. I mean, I know not everybody comes into this going, wow, this is my passion. But I promise if you stay with it long enough and you put your heart into it, you'll feel that way eventually. So anyway, that avoiding burnout in a big, general, global kind of way of looking at it is most effective if we key into that passion and keep that passion in the forefront of our mind. One way that we can do that is just to remember, you know, why we chose to do it. For some of us, it was a call. You know, we felt like, you know, we're on a hero's journey here, and this is our next step. And then, like I said, some people have done it out of a sense of duty, and there's certainly nothing that we can't, you know, we could certainly honor that reason as well. But when you kind of harken back to why you're doing it, almost everybody does it for sure so that their kids have quality education, right? That's a great reason as well. But first, I'm going to, before I go into my five ways of avoiding burnout, I'm going to start with the ORT, okay? Now, you haven't heard that acronym before because I made it up. And this is the obvious reminder time, okay? The first obvious reminder is to stay in a place of gratitude. When we choose gratitude, we're always going to be more empowered. There's nothing that disempowers us more than entitlement or feeling, you know, despair, right? So obviously count your blessings and be sure to, you know, choose gratitude about the opportunity that you have to work with amazing youth or amazing adults that you mentor. The second one is to have a sense of humor. I mean, let's face it, sometimes life is funny, and if you just sort of imagine that you're on a reality show and that's what this really is, then, you know, you can always sit back and laugh at it sometimes. It takes some of the pressure off to realize that, you know, sometimes things just happen and you have to laugh or else you'll cry, right? Another ORT is delegation, okay? We, a lot of the mentors that we train at Lemmy are women, and so I'm going to speak specifically to a flaw we seem to share, and that is to take on too much and to think that we're the only ones who can do anything, you know, who are the only ones who can do it right, right? So, you know, delegate. One way you can delegate, which actually improves your mentoring, is to delegate to your students. One of the fabulous ways to make that happen is when they ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Okay, you can go into, you know, despair that you don't know the answer, or you could say, "Wow, what a great question! How fortunate I am to mentor an amazing young person like yourself." But can you look it up? Can you figure it out? Can you come back next week and teach us about it? So they learn more from the question that they asked. There's also, you know, parents who, you know, can maybe take some of the load of what you're doing. And, you know, that can be simple things. You could ask parents to help you with simple things like keeping track of the inspirements. So, you know, who gets the ribbon for what and that kind of thing. I personally hate that. I hate that whole detail-oriented task. So, you know, that's the sort of thing that you can delegate to a parent who's not mentoring. And they don't need any special training, you know what I mean? It's not an intimidating thing to ask somebody to do, to come in for 15 minutes and help you with the sign-offs and that sort of thing. And then the other ORT is to let go of perfectionism, okay? We sometimes sabotage ourselves through unrealistically high expectations. And the story I like to think about is a story that I learned about the Amish people. They're a group of people that I just have a tremendous amount of respect for and have loved learning about it in various ways over the course of my studies. And one of the things that I learned that they do is so symbolic and inspiring. So they're pretty famous for their quilts, you know. They're handmade, no electricity quilts, right? And into every quilt they make, they put a mistake. And their reasoning is that only God can make something perfect. So somebody's not muted, and I'm hearing noises, so if you could mute yourselves, that'd be fantastic. Anyway, I love that. I love that, the symbolism of that. If we have to, and you have a child in the background, so just so you know who it is.
Sorry, it's probably me. How do I press?
Well, do you have a mute on your phone? That's the easiest way to do it. I think it's *1 otherwise, but don't. No, I can't be right. I'm sorry, I don't remember. ** or something. Sorry, if I was at a computer, I could tell you, but I am not. So anyway, the symbolism of that putting a mistake in a quilt reminds me that I'm not going to be able to do anything perfectly. And so close enough, you know, is acceptable. I'm not saying become a squatter and you know, don't prepare. I'm not suggesting anything along those lines, but just understand that we're, you know, not going to be perfect, and everything that we do in our classroom is not going to be perfect. All right, so those are my obvious reminders. Count your blessings, have a sense of humor, delegation, and let go of perfectionism. I think those are not new ideas to you, and that's just a reminder in case one of those is something that you could be doing and you're not. But the five ways to avoid burnout has to begin, you know, number one has to be self-care. We put a lot into all the roles that we play in our lives, and being a mentor is certainly a large one that requires a lot of our time and preparation and our thoughtful pondering, right, about our students and their needs and how to best work with the individuals that have been placed in our path. And it's very easy to put yourself last. It's very easy to put yourself last as a parent. You know, put your kids before yourself. And so self-care is something that really, you know, has to be part of the formula. So I don't know how many of you were privileged to hear Jenny give a keynote last year at one of the trainings that she did. But Jenny Baker talks about how, you know, the self-care idea is so important, and how when she's doing a Shakespeare play, she always gets sick. And so, you know, the year before she gave this, during her Shakespeare play, she had certain behaviors that, you know, certain behaviors of self-care that she made sure happened every day. I think one of them was going for a walk, and one of them was drinking enough water, and I think the other one had something to do with eating. But, you know, like more vegetables or less sugar or something, I can't remember. But she talked about how that was the first year that she, you know, didn't get sick putting on a Shakespeare play because it takes a ton of time. And that's the kind of difference that self-care can make. You know, it's going to look different. What everybody needs is going to look different. I have to have time alone in my head. I mean, one of the reasons I exercise is for, you know, the obvious reasons that exercise happens. But the other is because it gives me time alone in my head. When I'm walking, I get, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, and I'm able to, I don't know, think through things and just let my mind process all the different things that are going on in my life. So that's one of the ways it works for me. Not everybody loves walking. Not everybody, you know, lives where you can walk 360 days of the year. But that's something that helps for me. And then I do monthly things too. You know, like I get a massage and I usually, you know, do a pedicure or something, just so that I know that I have something, you know, to look forward to that's going to rejuvenate me. So, like I said, it's going to look different for you what that is. I'm just giving you permission and asking you to make sure you take care of yourself, because if you don't, burnout is the result, and that's the last thing we want. We want you to, you know, be inspiring, to keep inspiring those mentees that are under your care. The second thing is, don't get wrapped up in outcomes, okay? I don't know about you, but oftentimes when I'm mentoring, I want to see the results. You know, I want to see the results right then and there. I want to see, like, you know, the super successful simulation or whatever. And I found that if I have these expectations and I, you know, am vested in the expectation, and they don't come about just exactly as I had wanted them to, then I sometimes, you know, feel sort of, I'm just going to say, disenchanted that those expectations weren't met. And that's very demoralizing. It's much more freeing and much more productive to look at any given mentoring activity or environment as an opportunity to experience what actually happens. So if you think about a simulation, for instance, if you have an expectation of exactly how it's going to come about, you know, how it's going to unfold, then you will most likely be disappointed, because simulations are by definition sort of messy. You know, the same thing is true of a colloquium. I'm not saying go in there with, you know, with no idea what you're trying to accomplish. I'm just saying embrace what actually happens and look for the good. And in your debriefing, which we're all doing debriefing, right? In your debriefing, make sure that you bring out the good things that happened and help the students realize the epiphanies that they had and help them come to their epiphanies. So another thing about outcomes that's really important, and this is a reminder about a fundamental principle of the kind of education that we do, is sometimes students choose failure. Okay, so if I have expectations for an individual student and they don't live up to them, we have to accept that choosing failure is an option. We are educating, you know, to help develop a free people, right? That has to include their ability to choose not to buy in, not to follow through. And sometimes in that choice of failure is the lesson that they need, right? Each student comes to you with unique background, you know, unique deficiencies, things that make, you know, your particular project, you know, more difficult or less difficult than for other kids. You know, they're all in a different place, and we are just helping them on their path, right? We're giving them opportunities to take one more step down the path towards freedom, down the path towards a great education. And sometimes we just have to accept the fact that they are not always going to choose to buy in and be okay with that. Hopefully this summer when you went to LEMI training, you really went deep on those on those five mentor skills. And the first, and the reason she put it first, you know, the reason Anneli put it first, was because it's fundamental, and that is the skill of honoring, accepting your students for, you know, who they are, what their stories are, what the choices that they make, and accepting them and honoring them in the place that they are. And it's not always easy because we want them to all be successful. We want them all to, you know, come to a greater knowledge, and not all of them are going to choose that. And when we get wrapped up in the expectation of these certain outcomes with even individual students, that can add to our burnout. And embracing their choice to fail is a very difficult difficult part of the mentoring process, but it has to be there. Otherwise, we're compulsory, right? Otherwise, we're choosing force or manipulation or coercion instead of freedom. So the third thing in our list of things that will help us avoid burnout is to plan for seasons. Okay, and so we're going to talk about two different kinds of seasons. There's a classic call on seasons, which I highly recommend you listen to. But I've just got to touch on this subject because I think it's so important. Okay, so there's the seasons of the calendar, right? We know, you know, that, or at least I've experienced, I guess I should say, that in the fall, things are productive. It's like students come in, they're engaged, they, you know, want to be there, they want to work hard. You know, it's very easy comparatively to you know, engage them in learning activities, that it doesn't feel that way in the spring. That's why we put the project end in the spring, because it's a different feeling. The actual season, the calendar seasons are different. So another part of that calendar thing is like the holidays, right? So I was mentoring a torchbearer who was also mentoring, and in December we were having a mentor meeting, and she was like ready to throw in the towel, and I said, well, okay, you know, you can do that in February, but you can't do it in December. Okay, I'm gonna definitely dissuade you from making a major decision like that in December. And of course, after the holidays were over and the stress of the over sugarization, you know, things just look a little brighter, you know. So you have to realize that there's going to be times where in the calendar that are already going to be harder. I hate when our Commonwealth School day lands on Halloween or the day after Halloween, because it's just like, whoa, what is going on with these children? You know, these youth, sorry, although sometimes I'm working with children. But you know what I'm saying? It's just like this calendar thing that's going to happen whether we like it or not, and it changes the flow and the energy, and if you embrace it and plan for it and, you know, put in activities accordingly, then it doesn't sabotage you. If you try to pretend that spring is fall, then you'll, you know, be disappointed and have a feeling of, you know, of burnout. So we have the calendar seasons to think about. I don't know if you've ever tried to extend things into the summer. Like, you know, you have, I've done this. I've tried to, like, you know, keep the learning happening in the summer through, you know, extending something. And, yeah, it doesn't work. Summer isn't the time for that. So, anyway, I've learned to really respect the seasons and go with those. So the other season I want to talk about is the seasons of life, okay? Everybody, you know, you as a mentor have seasons in your life. When you have a baby, it's a season. When you, you know, go through some kind of, you know, trial, like a major financial trial or relationship trial or whatever, that is a season. And when we try to just pretend like it's not, like everything's just the same and we're just going to keep the same rhythms and we're going to keep the same intensity, it's going to add to your burnout and your feelings of overwhelm and why did I ever sign up to do this in the first place. So there's the seasons in your life, but there's also the seasons in your students' lives. So the Shakespeare play is a great example. If you're the other project, okay, so your kids are in Shakespeare and you're teaching Key, just know that as that play comes closer and closer, they are going to do less and less outside work. So you have to plan your class time to be very productive because that may be all the time that they have to focus on Key of Liberty or whatever your project is. So if you plan for that, again, you're not going to be frustrated. If you expect the same level of involvement from your students, then, you know, it's that outcome thing again, and you're going to be disappointed. So I just highly recommend that you think about what's happening. You know, there may be other major events that happen in your particular Commonwealth school or even in the community that your Commonwealth school resides in. And if you plan for those to be different, those particular event times to be different, then again, you won't feel like, wow, I'm doing all this work and they're not, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing. And that leads to, you know, those negative feelings that are so disempowering. All right. So my favorite is number four. Okay. I call this, and this is just my own little label for it, the curse of capability. Okay. When you are a very capable person, which I know all of you are, people ask you to do a lot of stuff. Okay, they naturally gravitate to people like you who are on a path of growth because they see you and the things that you're accomplishing, and they think, oh wow, now there is a capable person, and so I'll ask him or her to, you know, do this thing. And if you're always saying yes, you know, then you will be overwhelmed. I know from personal experience. You will feel burnt out and maybe even a little put upon, you know. So learn to say no to stuff. And I mean like N-O, but also learn to say, you know, say K-N-O-W also, as in I know what is on the other end of that stick. I know that by me saying yes to this, it also means I'm having to say no to these more important things, right? So learn to say, you know, no, N-O, but also be confident in your knowledge, in your K-N-O-W, that you realize that by saying yes to this thing, you're having to say no to other things either immediately or further down the line. Because not every good and worthwhile thing is appropriate for you to take on, right? There's the analogy of the monkey on my back. If I can get the monkey off my back and put it on your back, you know, I'm relieved of the monkey, and you've got it now, right? So when people ask you to do things, kind of think, is this a monkey that I want to carry on my back or not? And it's very freeing to take, responsibility for what you choose to, you know, you have this capability, and it's only a curse if you say yes to everything, okay? And I'm going to give you my favorite, I'm going to call it a technique for learning to say no. So I know a lot of people put their calendar on their phones, okay? And I don't do that because it would get rid of a very valuable tool in my life. The calendar in my life that's, you know, kind of my master calendar is on the wall in my home. So if I'm somewhere and somebody says to me, hey, yeah, I've got this meeting, you know, can you speak at it you know, next Wednesday, I can just very easily say, let me check my calendar and I'll let you know. And that act allows me to think about whether or not saying yes to this is something that I, you know, that fits into my life and that I want to do. So this is just really, I mean, another way of saying don't put so much on your plate that burnout is the only option, right? Because if you're saying yes to everything, you're such a capable person, so everybody's asking you, I know this. if you're saying yes to everything, you can only stay at that intensity for a certain period of time, and the natural results of that are burnout. So number five, this is a recurring, I'm going to say solution, a paradigm, I guess, for mentors who feel in a state of overwhelm. So many of you know Sherry Gagan. She's been a Lemmy trainer for a long time. Sorry, I'm losing track of the years. But just one of the most fabulous, capable people, upbeat. I mean, she's just, I can't say enough good about her. A lot of you probably have been trained by her in Shakespeare. So anyway, one day she called and she said, I need a mentor. I need to talk to somebody. Do you have some time? And I said, sure, of course. And she was in a state of burnout. She was mentoring a new project. I think it was Quest. She was the president of the women's organization in her church. Anyway, she had a lot of stuff on her plate, and she was just, you know, like she was beside herself with the amount of time she had to prepare for class. And it's really gross. she was in a state of burnout. I did ask her permission to actually use her name, but I thought it would be powerful for you to know that somebody as capable and upbeat and fabulous as she was in that state, because I think it's something that happens too often. Anyway, I said, look, Sherry, you are enough. You showing up in that classroom and bringing all the knowledge that you have, all the mentoring skills that you have, you know, all the life experience, all the things that you're currently doing will add to, you know, the discussion that's going on. And, yeah, you're in a place where you cannot prepare as much as you would like, but you are enough already because of the path you've lived, you know, and who you are. So number five is that you are enough. And it's not a way to go to just sit back and go, you know, I am such a totally finished product and, you know, you're just lucky to have me as a mentor. I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you do your best in your circumstances and know that you are enough. And know that what you have to contribute and how you can love and help those students just taking one more step down their path, I mean, that is enough, and you are enough. I learned from Tiffany many, many years ago a really valuable thing that she calls the teacher matrix. And I'm going to share it with you because I don't recall that it's ever been in one of our classic calls. So I'm just not sure it's readily available. And even if it is, it's time to remind people of this really valuable self-evaluation tool. She asks herself this question: have I sufficiently inspired my student and done my job? I'm going to repeat that in case you're writing this down. Have I sufficiently inspired my student and done my job? If no, okay, here's our first leg of this matrix. If no, then do I need to, and then she kind of has a list, but this could just depend on you, do I need to pay the price myself? Do I need to create an inspiring environment? Do I need to repent? And, you know, et cetera. So she asks herself these questions. If I haven't done, you know, if the answer is no to inspiring my students and done my job, then what do I need to do to change? And then if yes, have I sufficiently inspired my student and done my job? The answer is yes. And they aren't doing their part, then do they have the skill and ability? You remember during Lemmy Philosophy, most of you probably heard, and Elodie and I know there are other people who do philosophy in some of the other trainings, but we have this, one of the three R's is remember that the scholar ladders are diagnostic tools, okay? So do they have the skill and ability to do what I'm asking them to do, right? Use the scholar ladders, because sometimes your students aren't doing well or they're struggling, not because you're not inspiring, but because they lack a skill. Perhaps they lack, you know, the skill of reading at a deeper level, or perhaps they lack the skill of being able to memorize, or perhaps they lack the ability to manage their time. Okay, so you're trying to use that scholar ladder as a tool to evaluate. Okay, because if you could identify the skill or ability that is causing them to struggle, then you can either work with them yourself, tell their parent, I think you really need to work with your son on this or your daughter on that, and work, you know, work the problem, the underlying problem, which is not an unwilling student, but a student who is lacking something, lacking a skill or ability. But if yes, and they are choosing to fail, and therefore they feel down. If no, then what skill or ability do I need to teach them so that they can do what I'm asking? Okay, so we have, by going through that process, you know, it's an if then process, right? If this, then that. By going through that process of evaluation, we can kind of figure out what the root problem is. Is the root problem I'm not doing enough to inspire them, or I'm not paying the price of getting an education myself and I'm expecting them to do it? Because, hello, that does not work. We have to pay the price. If I am doing all that I can, is it the student who's lacking a skill or ability? Is it the student who has an emotional component that is not allowing them to move forward? If you got an Elodie's mentor handbook, she talks about the elephant and the writer, and when the elephant sits down, the emotional part of the student, when it sits down, when it's feeling fat and it won't move, it doesn't matter how much great direction you give to the writer or how many fantastic systems, because the elephant's not going to move, right? So, you know, I refer you to that fantastic work she wrote for more information on that. But, you know, if they are choosing failure and not just lacking skill and ability, again, we don't get wrapped up in outcomes. We honor their choice to choose failure. And it's okay to even have that conversation with them. You know, I'm your mentor, and I'm here to guide you on your path, and I love doing it. But it sounds to me like you're choosing not to educate yourself. You know, is that accurate? And if so, you know, that's fine. I still love you. There's no reason for shame. There's no reason for, you know, any humiliation or anger. You accept that's the outcome. So really, the teacher matrix covers both. You know, both the fact that you are enough, if you can answer yes to that first question, have I sufficiently inspired my student and done my job? if you can answer yes to that. But it also wraps into the idea of the outcomes, getting wrapped up into outcomes. And I don't know, I found it over the years just really valuable when I'm struggling with a particular student. What is it that I can do here? Is there anything more I can do? Is it a lacking skill? Looking, you know, using the scholar ladders, is he lacking vision? Because that's a scholar ladder, and sometimes it is that they feel that, you know, their education is disconnected from their purpose in life. So evaluating that using the scholar ladders as a tool is very, very empowering. So I would like to open it up if anybody has any questions or if they're struggling with one of these components or if there's anything that you do to avoid burnout that you'd like to share with the other people on the call and the people who will listen to the recording. I'd love to hear from you.
Kathy, I have a question, and I think you kind of addressed it in the last thing that you said. My daughter just finished, well, she's finishing up Euro Project, who's 16, this is Heidi. She is not motivated to do Quest next year. And my dream was that, oh, my gosh, this has been so wonderful. I'm going to, you know, go to Lemmy and I'm going to train in Quest, and then I can mentor her in Quest, and we're going to learn some more together, and we're going to have a great time. And she told me last night, Mom, I'm not a writer. I don't write. And I had a personal epiphany while you were talking, because she had gone through a writing class that really killed her love of writing and a few years ago. And so what she has written in Hero Class has been amazing. And it was like a moment when you were speaking, I was like, oh, I need to get out her papers and show her, look what you've done. You can do this. So my big struggle is I want to inspire her to take Quest. I don't want to say, no, you need to do this. You need to do this. So.
Well, I have a couple thoughts that I'd be happy to share with you. The first is that you can choose to do Quest in spite of her choice. Does that make sense? By going on a path that you want her to trod is going to speak volumes to her. You know, being able, you know, like again, you accept her choice. Okay, you don't want to take Quest. I'm going to mentor it anyway, and you know, I hope you change your mind, right? So
yeah,
you can continue on that. You can continue on that path, inviting her along. I mean, it's only April, right? It's not till September that she needs to catch the vision. Do you have some amazing Quest students that you could bring into your, like Quest graduates or Quest 3 students in your Commonwealth that you could bring into your class and just have them talk about how the class has changed them?
Actually, that would be a really great idea. I'm not sure this is accurate, but I heard last night that one of the kids that I would have invited to come in and inspire our students for the next class had actually dropped out of Quest 2 the second semester. And I don't know what his circumstances were, but he would have been the one that I would have said would be so inspiring. So she's heard a lot of negative, and she's had a lot of friends drop out of it. So I don't know if that's making an impression, but I'll try to find somebody who can do that.
Because it is a powerful force to employ what I call an elder peer. It is really, really, they can speak to your youth in a way that you can't because you're the old lady, you know?
Right.
If they hear it from you, it's like a 3. If they hear it from one of their peers who's, you know, slightly older, they potentially admire, it's a 9 or a 10. So I employ them whenever possible. You know, student mentors are fabulous. I use them in my business and the whole thing, because I just think it's really, really super powerful motivator to have them, you know, go, wow, you know, they look up at this person who's maybe 1, 2, 3 years older than them, and they can say, wow, you know, Quest changed my life. You know, and chances are in your community there's some graduates from a year or two ago who you could probably call on, you know.
Right.
So that would be and it could be done, you know, for the whole class, so it's not, you know, singled out to her. And you know, I mean, I just think there could be some magic there for more students than just your own. The other, you know, the other part of this is her is addressing, you know, her fear of writing and her hate of writing is what it sounds like. And you can do that, you know, in the meantime. Does that make sense? Like, it doesn't have to, it can be something that you're doing at home to inspire her to work on writing and just learn to love it.
Right.
The writing cycle is also a diagnostic tool. Okay. Figure out where on the cycle she was blocked. Start back at speaking. Figure out, you know, how you can help her find her voice and move forward with it. Thank you. Anybody else have a thought or a question or something to share about their own ways of avoiding burnout? Okay. It's always hard on a conference call to know if people are like having trouble finding how to unmute themselves or whatever. So anyway, I will I'll take that as a no, and I will wrap things up here. Just as a reminder, in case you didn't get them the first time, we have self-care. Don't get wrapped up in outcomes. Plan for seasons. You know, dealing with the curse of capability. And you are enough with the teacher matrix as a tool to evaluate where you are in that process with the struggles that you may be having in your classroom. I'm going to just end with, well, first of all, a ton of gratitude. We are so grateful for what you do, for the love that you give your students and the time that you give them. You know, the impact that Lemmy is having in the world, and the Lemmy projects and the Lemmy mentors that we're having in the world is tremendous. I mean, thousands of students. And we know that it happens because of great people who become great mentors, giving you know, amazing content to their youth in an inspiring way. We're so grateful for you. I can't wait for training season to start. I love being face-to-face with our mentors and just, you know, having conversations and doing the trainings. It's absolutely the highlight of my year. And I'm looking forward to that. I hope you're going to join us. We do have the early bird deadline coming up in a couple days and would love to have you join us at one of the many trainings around the country. And I know that I speak for not only myself but the other trainers and Tiffany and Anality and Rick when I say that we love you and we are so grateful for all that you do. I've been mentoring a long time, and I've watched, you know, the lives of my own children and my students be blessed. I've watched as they've grown and gone out into the world and you know, and are actually making a difference. I can't even express how much I love what we do and how grateful I am for the pioneering work of Tiffany and Anality in the field of understanding scholar phase and delivering a quality product. You know, none of us at Lemmy consider ourselves or the things that we do perfect, but I know that they work, and I know that the outcomes are worth the effort that each of us as mentors puts in. And I think there's nothing more inspiring than inspiring other people. So if you're feeling any sense of burnout, go out and be inspiring, and that will in turn inspire you in a natural progression that happens. Because when we remember what we're doing and why we're doing it, and we inspire somebody else to work a little harder or to make a difference somewhere, the payback to us is like, you know, an adrenaline fix, or a, you know, some kind of a chemical reaction, I'm sure, that's happening in our brains. It's a way to feed ourselves while we're helping other people. So thank you again for all that you do, and thank you for joining me this morning. I hope you have a fabulous rest of your semester. This will be my last opportunity to meet with the mentors, but be sure to come to training, and if I'm at the one you're at, I'd love to have a face-to-face conversation with you. So thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Kathy.
You bet.
Conference muted.